Hey, I'm Michael.
And I'm Greg.
And we're two new dads and the co-founders of a company called Lalo and your hosts of the Dad Pod, where we talk with cool dads doing cool stuff so we can learn a thing or two. Today, we're chatting with Brett Podolsky, a brand new dad and the co-founder of The Farmer's Dog, a company on a mission to make it easy to care for pets by delivering fresh, healthy meals. We talked to Brett about being a first-time dad, him and his wife's infertility journey, and the process of supporting your partner through breastfeeding struggles. So the other day I was thinking about how having a dog first made me maybe didn't make me a better parent or better dad, but also just like prepared me for fatherhood a little bit. Do you think about that ever?
Yeah, of course, every day. I was a dog father. I was a father. I've been a father for a while at this point. Now, my responsibilities have changed massively. I never had to wipe my dog's ass other than like, you know.
Oh, come on. You never had a poop dangle?
Yeah, of course I have. It's like literally, I don't even want to get into detail. It's like embarrassing.
Everybody that has a dog knows exactly what we're talking about.
But 100%, like honestly, like my expectations of what I was going to be like as a father were purely based on how good of a father I thought I was to my dog.
Did you live up to those expectations?
Of course not. But, you know, listen, everyone, same, like when you get a dog, it is not too dissimilar. You're about to embark on something that you never have done before ever. And it's fight or flight at that point. So you're either going to let your dog survive or he's not, or she's not. And same thing with your kid. Like you're just going to figure it out as you go. So I think that experience of just doing something and saying like, I have to make this work. Like there are no other options. Definitely made me prepared.
Yeah. For me, I don't know if it was about the expectations as our dogs are barking here in the studio. Of course, bring your dog to your podcast studio day. It was not so much about how my expectations for being a dad as much as it just introduced me to a new level of responsibility. Mm. Like I have a human or not a human, a living creature that I need to make sure can eat,
yeah,
will sleep, will do all the things I want it to do and obviously behave.
Hopefully in an orderly manner.
Maisie, come on. We're recording a podcast.
The behavior piece you've nailed.
Yeah, the funny thing that we joke about this all the time is like there are so many similarities between Maisie's behavior and Gemma's behavior now that she's one that we're like, oh shit, it's us as parents. It is not them.
What would you say like Gemma and Maisie's big like what is the one like common characteristic that they both share?
Strong-willed. Oh my god. I mean like
who do you think that comes from?
I think it comes from our lack of discipline. Like we're not routine people. There's that saying with dogs, there's no bad dogs, there's bad owners, right?
True.
And we thought, okay, you know, with the dog, like we're just, you know, we got a trainer, we trained the dog, quote unquote. But when the trainer's there, it's just as much about you being trained so that you do it when they leave the house.
100%.
We wouldn't do it after. We would try and then we'd forget and we're like, whatever. She'll figure it out. And dogs don't just figure it out. And then we see with Gemma, they're definitely, you know, when we're more regimented with her, she is, you know, picks up better and things like that. So there's... Yeah, and they just know what they like. They're not going to do things that they don't want to do. I think even like she's flirting with walking, right?
Yeah.
And she's taking a couple steps here or there. But she knows she can get from point A to point B in lightning speed crawling. She won't walk because she just wants to get there and she doesn't want to waste her time. So she'd rather just crawl. Even though she knows she can take a few steps, it'll just take longer.
Right.
So that's the similarity that we see in their behavior.
You know, the other thing people don't tell you is that, you know, when you get a dog first, does it prepare you? Sure. Like that's why we're having this conversation today. But no one makes you realize like you're about to have two kids.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
right.
Hey, you're going to bathe your kid at 7. You're going to put him to bed. And then guess what? At 9 o'clock when you're fucking exhausted, you got to walk the dog.
Right. It's time for the dog poop.
And in New York, it's 20 degrees. And then wait, you know what happens the next morning when you wake up and you feed your kid? You got to do it again. Like I 100% think, like I look at both of them. I have two children.
Yeah. I mean, 100. You have definitely have a shitload of responsibility.
Oh my God.
Nonetheless, even if anybody wants to argue the semantics of that. But a lot of my wife and I figuring out what works in for us is like, you know, shared responsibilities and co-parenting and everything like revolves around who's responsible for the kid at what time and who's responsible for the dog at what time. And that's a lot how we run our mornings. We alternate and, you know, whoever is not on baby duty, so you have extra time, is on dog walking duty in the morning.
Yeah.
And so it is a back and forth, the trade-off, who's responsible for what. But oftentimes, you know, it's a lot more tiring with the baby than it is with the dog.
Oh.
So sometimes we do see sometimes like we just need that moment of peace and quiet.
It's like reprieve to go walk the
dog. I'll go walk the dog. You know, like,
I'll do it tonight.
Yeah. There are some times where my wife's like, you know what? I just need some space. I'll take the dog for the walk.
That's nice.
So I think there's pluses and minuses.
I mean, for sure. But you know, the thing that's funny about like thinking about, wow, you know, I have two kids. Is this, you know, yeah, it's about like the additional responsibility. There's also, are they getting along? You're right. And then it's like everyone asks when I had Jace.
Yeah. How are they?
How are they?
Yeah. All those tips on like, bring this thing home. Yeah. Let them smell it first.
Put the blanket. I'm like,
oh, Maisie knew the baby was coming way before any human. Like she knew, like, it's just, but I'm sure Brett has so much to talk on this. He had two dogs. He lost a dog, unfortunately, and has one now and obviously is a new dad. So let's bring him in and hear his take as well. Hey Brett, what's going on?
Hey guys.
So you're 1 month in.
one month in.
How you doing? Yes. How you guys hanging in?
Oh, amazing. Amazing. I could not have imagined it being better. It's just, what a magical experience.
It helps get through some of the long nights, right?
Yeah, that's for sure.
I was just going to say, have you guys had any rough nights yet, or has everything been pretty smooth so far?
You know, I feel like I'm just like in this brand new blissful phase where like nothing bothers me.
Right.
So, you know, she could do no wrong. It's like if she's crying in the middle of the night, I'm like, great excuse to go in there and pick her up.
Right.
Yeah. I remember those. Like, I was so overjoyed. Like, those cries in the early days, first of all, they're a little less forceful in the early days.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like more like, oh my God, I can't believe this thing is mine. This is amazing. I get to hold them.
Those
initial days are magical. Even like leaving the hospital, it's like, wait, you're letting me go home with this thing? This is mine?
Honestly, when they let me go home, so my wife obviously delivered like middle of COVID, April 14th. I honestly was so scared shitless when I left the hospital. I picked up my wife at the hospital and I go, can someone help me? Obviously, having a baby company, people just assume Michael and I know everything. I'm like, can someone help me put this baby into a car seat? No one would look at me or touch the baby. I'm like, fuck it. I hope this is okay. Like, that was like my first experience of, you know what? Like, it's all going to be good no matter what. Like, you just figure this shit out.
Yeah. What about the day, like you know, hours after you have the baby and they, you know, they give you your room and then they just leave.
You're like, oh my God.
What do I do?
Like,
they were like, you could put her in the nursery, but I was like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. I gotta be with him.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. Anyway. What an experience.
But yeah, I mean, Brett, I mean, I think one of the interesting things, I mean, we all know each other, you know, pretty well, but similarly, I think we all got dogs before we had kids. And I think we were all like the primary caretaker of the dog at some point in time. Like it was our idea, you know, with our significant others to get a dog. But how has it helped you, you know, transition into becoming a, you know, a father to Paws now?
Well, I guess it was good just to have somebody to be responsible for, who like truly can't do anything for themselves. Like,
right.
You know, she can't even open the fridge. So I think that was probably good just to like, you know, grow up over the last few years with my dogs.
Yeah.
But I think one of the best things was having a dog made me think I was already prepared to have a kid. So I kind of went into it like with this confidence, like, you know, I had a dog, I had two dogs, a baby's gonna be nothing. And then the baby came, I was like, all right, I was not prepared at all for this, but I'm happy I walked into it with.
Yeah, dogs are a little more instinctual, right? I always am amazed at like watching these animal shows, and it's like baby animal out of the womb is like walking and running the next day.
Totally.
And like,
a baby human is just a blob.
Honestly, there's always for me one comparable experience that I'll never forget. And also is like everyone obviously has, you know, their nanny cams and, you know, a lot of people have dog cameras for their dogs. And, you know, I think similarly, right, when you first get a puppy, you're like buying all this shit. You're just, you know, trying to figure it out. But there's one night my dog's a puppy sitting in his crate crying. And I was like, oh my God. Like
so
what?
Painful.
So painful. I run out and when like just like my boxers and I'm like sitting there with my head between my hands, just being like, oh my God, just like, I'm here, dog, like stop crying. And honestly, so my wife, like it records it and she was like, she was looking on the Nest app and she's like, why were you like sitting out there naked for like 30 minutes last night? And there definitely have been similar experiences where now I've walked into Jace's room when he was first born. I'm like, oh my God, I can't get you to stop crying. Can you please, 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 please just stop? And the fact that I went through that experience with my dog always made me confident, being like, okay, if I could do that, then I could do this. But I would also agree, like, then you just realize you absolutely know nothing. Yeah, it's next level.
Yeah.
Exactly.
it's just such a crazy thing. Like, I think we expect our dogs to be, you know, pretty much dependent on us. But, you know, if they, you know, we've all experienced or heard the stories of like a dog that runs away and they just like magically make it home. Like they could do a bit once they're, you know, in like, you know, they're a few years into their life. But a child, it's like for like 18 years minimum, they're like completely dependent. And then like once they hit like 13, they think they're smarter than you, which I'm like really scared of that day where there's going to be like this 10-year gap of time where they think they're smart, or like my kids think they're smarter than me, but they have no clue.
Frightening. How have your dogs been with Paws?
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Like, not, like I was, you know, a little worried about like how to handle that initial experience of like, you know, my Jada just wanting to like be all over her. And she was actually been amazing. Jada's like extremely intelligent. I guess she just understands like, I need to give this very fragile, tiny human space. I'm actually not even sure if she knows it's a human being, but she knows it's something that's alive.
Right, and right. Precious to you.
Yeah. She's like, I'm just going to give her space.
Yeah. There are so many stories. I mean, I would say with my dog Maisie, there have definitely been phases of like attachment, kind of indifference, even going back to like, maybe you guys experienced this too, but when my wife was pregnant, Maisie knew like 100%. She knew that there was something in my wife's belly. Even to the point my wife, the night my wife went into labor, my wife was taking a bath and her water broke in the bath, but we didn't know at the time. Maisie, who hates water, hates going into the bath, was trying to jump into the bathtub. Like we have it in video on pictures. Her instincts just took over. She knew something was happening and it was so wild. And then my wife gets out of the bath, figures out her water broke and she's in labor.
Yeah.
But Maisie knew first. And then when we got home, Maisie was so soft, so gentle, similar to Jada. And then there was a period of time around 4 to 6 months where Gemma figured out she could pull Maisie's fur.
Mm.
That was bad. She like, Maisie was like, I don't want anything. And now recently, now that Gemma's a year, she figured out like, oh, I can pet Maisie really gently. I can be soft to her. I can love her. I can whack her on the head also.
Yeah.
And now they have like this friendship, this like sisterly friendship that, is really fun to watch.
My dog is so jealous. So jealous. He's not mean. But he is like, you took my parents away from me. I was the only child for so long. How could you do this? Now that Jace is like eating and he's now purposely feeding my dog, the bond is starting to form. But it has taken us like literally up to this point. Like Monty was just like, get this guy out of here. Like, what is he doing here? Like, he's literally cramping my style and my space and he took my parents.
Well, babies and dogs are just mooches a lot of the time.
100%.
It wasn't the primary mooch. But 1 month down, what's been the most surprising thing to you, Brett?
About their relationship?
Or about parenting? Just about being a dad.
Man. Well, there's so much. I feel like everything just kind of caught me by surprise. Like when people were telling me, you know, everyone's like, you know, get your sleep, get your sleep. And I'm like, okay, you know, it's kind of like a cliche thing. So I'm like, ah, I kind of disregarded it. But then when like you're actually waking up every 3 hours and like what that means and like how you're just not living a regular life anymore. Like you are living 3 hour feeding intervals. So yeah, that's, that was interesting transition. Like once it had gone like 2 weeks of that and I was like, okay, Now I'm exhausted. This is a lot harder. I probably should have listened to everybody that was just telling me to sleep in as much as possible for like the last few months.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're not bears and we can't like store that energy and just like hibernate that's for what a little I was bit say. Before, but that would be nice.
Yeah, exactly. That's like the thing, you know, get sleep. You're like, am I just supposed to like go to bed at 7 o'clock every night? Like what is the expectation around that sleep? And then how long can you store that extra energy? Is it not just for the next day? But obviously the feeding it's definitely an experience. It's amazing though, how when they're that young, and Brett, I'm sure you're, you know, going through this, it's like, they're really just like trying to communicate the best way they can. And like, there's only so many things, you know, it's like a checklist of like, did this work? No. Did this work? Yes. And then, you know, you're able to soothe them. And like, once you're able to soothe them, there's literally no better feeling. And like in the entire world in the middle of the night, when it's just you and your kid.
And not only did you win,
you've now earned your sleep. Yeah. But your kid is just like, you know, obviously so happy as well.
Yeah. Oh my God. What a moment. Like when they're crying and then you grab them and you pick them up and they calm down and you think that it was you.
Yeah.
it was to a degree. You got to give yourself more credit than
all
that.
All right. I'll take it.
But has there been anything that to you has been like surprisingly hard or difficult or anything to work through?
Honestly, like not really. I think just the getting accustomed to the new sleep pattern was probably the most difficult. You know, also I figuring out like, cause you know, breastfeeding is really, really difficult. And I don't know if like we like went into this not really understanding how difficult it is. And I'm thinking like, all right, baby comes out, boom, we got a great stream going and you know, that'll be, you know, then we got free formula basically until we move to solids. But it doesn't always work that way. I think that's something that like is just not talked about enough.
Yeah.
I think how difficult it is.
I think Greg and I definitely have different experiences, and I know others that have many different experiences. You know, my wife, it did come naturally, luckily. We feel very fortunate of that. However, there were some downsides. Because COVID hit about a month and a half after Gemma was born, my wife didn't see in the near future her going back to work because she works in museums. And so there was less of a need to pump. She also didn't like it hormonally. It threw her off. And so Gemma never took a bottle. And what that meant was I couldn't contribute to that level of soothing her. And and my wife still breastfeeds to the day. She's a year and she's still breastfeeding. But trust me, there are times we wish, you know, there was more weaning or she ate more solids and, you know, relied on it less, or I could give her a bottle today because now there's a leash attached, you know, it's like
totally,
you're handcuffed to it a little bit, and that there's pros and cons to it. And, you know, I think the fact is there's no right way. And that's the most important thing for everybody. Like whatever works for you, works for your family. I have a friend whose wife, you know, deals with depression. She tried it in the hospital. She's like, this is going to mess me up hormonally.
Yeah.
I can't do this. We have to go to formula because she looked out for her own mental health. And like, that's okay too, because that's what worked for them.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you can't sacrifice yourself because you're not going to be able to be the best parent you could be if you're depressed or miserable and tired. You have to, in my opinion, you should prioritize being the best parent. And if you can manage to breastfeed, it's a blessing.
Yep.
But if not, if it's too difficult, if it's making you feel depressed, it's going to just backfire anyway. So it's just not worth it. And, you know, it ended up sending me into this, you know, huge deep dive, which was very reminiscent of what I was doing before starting the Farmer's Dog, where I'm like all over the internet trying to figure out like, how regulated is this industry really? Are these companies honest? Where, like, who makes good baby formula? Mm-hmm. And, you know, frankly, it reminded me of the pet food industry in a lot of ways. And I mean, we tried a few things. We're actually on a brand now that I believe is a Swiss-based brand. Just, you know, because we heard that in Europe, it's just, you know, just tougher regulations and the companies are just, you know, light years ahead of where they are in America. So now we have this stuff, you know, brought in from Switzerland.
Has Paz liked some formula and disliked others?
Thankfully, it seems like she'll eat anything.
That's good.
That's great. My son, my wife pumped for and breastfed for like 2 or 3 months, almost 4 months. And then, you know, I think similarly, it just became like too taxing for her. And she was planning to go back to work and just figuring out. But, you know, we switched to formula. We've had like, initially I started and I said, okay, very similarly, Brett, I got to figure out what is the cleanest, what is the best, what is providing the most nutrients, like what do hopefully other people use? You know, I bought stuff, I think it was from, I want to say the Netherlands or Germany or somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I'm giving him like the Rolls Royce of formula is pretty much what it is. Only to find out my son only likes what I call, like to call at home, the McDonald's version of formula, yeah. Which is like the basic CVS stuff. Like I tried like all these different ones and it's just so, so, so interesting. And then I just like gave up. I'm like, you know what? Like the most important thing is no matter how you do it, your kid is being fed. Right. You're keeping exactly. them fed and you're keeping them happy. So, you know, different strokes for different folks. Like there's a million different ways to slice this thing.
Yeah.
And the most important thing to your point, Brett, is literally your sanity and your kid is eating. And if you can accomplish those two things, like everyone is going to be okay. Everyone's going to be okay.
Yep. I totally agree. I wish it was talked about more because I feel like women, you know, it puts them through so much stress.
Totally.
Because they feel like they're supposed to be breastfeeding. And it ends up depressing them even more. And it just doesn't seem like a topic that I ever hear people talking about.
I would even agree that when my wife was considering stopping breastfeeding, the only person that I was like super close with that had kids similar age with me was Mike. And Mike's wife has continued breastfeeding. And then, right, you see like, you just like read obviously about what is good for the kid and what is not. And like what I've realized is there's only your version of perfect, your family's version of perfect. Like that is the only perfect solution. But I totally agree with you. Like there was no place that I felt like I could turn to. Like I in turn was like talking to my wife about like, well, like why are we not breastfeeding anymore if you have the opportunity to? But it was so much not about that in the end of the day. And it, like that pressure was just like coming from the outside world, not from a place of like education.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of topics, Brett, right? I mean, that probably are a little passe or just kind of thrown in a closet and not talked about regarding so many factors, breastfeeding being one of them. But I remember maybe it was like almost a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, being at the farmer's dog office and you and I were chatting and you were probably the first person, first other guy that I had an open conversation with about IVF and fertility. Mm-hmm. You and I don't know if you remember that conversation.
When I chop liver over here, your co-founder? No, I'm messing with you.
Yeah, we don't talk.
I do remember that.
Yeah, and I think that's another topic, right? You know, we both went through that process of, you know, fertility journey, not having, you know, an easy time conceiving right away, maybe not living up to the dreams of how it would happen or how you'd conceive. And I think that's, you know, obviously another topic, and no offense to Greg here, but maybe we have that kind of joy is even more than the elevation because of how hard it was to get there. Every baby's amazing, but I don't know, how did you, like coming out of that journey, like was there any residual impact of like that fertility journey once Paz was there? Like how did you guys go through it, or even talk about, you know, your own journey and how you and Michaela got through it?
Yeah, well, you know, we started trying probably, it could have been a year and a half before we were pregnant. And I mean, it's so stressful. It's so stressful because every time you find out that your wife isn't pregnant, you have to wait another few weeks, and then, you know, and then she's ovulating, and you gotta like, you know, rush home and try again, and then it doesn't work. It's so stressful, and you know, eventually after some time, we tried IUI, and we got really, really lucky on the first try, which we were not expecting. And it was just such a relief. And I mean, I feel horrible because I know there are so many women who go through this, and they'll go through several attempts and it doesn't work. And even IVF sometimes doesn't work. And it's just so heartbreaking. And, you know, every time it's not like, all right, let's go back in and try this again tomorrow. It's like, all right, now we have to wait weeks. And it's so stressful. But then once it happens, it's like you forget about everything and it was all worth it. And you start to think like, okay, like, you know, she was ready, like this, her soul was ready to, you know, start now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you try to, you know, make sense of it using more like, you know, just kind of thinking more like spiritually about it. And, but, you know, I mean, now that she's here, it was well worth the wait, because, you know, if it wasn't this shot that got her pregnant, it would have been a totally different baby. And I couldn't imagine my first baby being anybody but Paz. So, you know, it all worked out in the end. And, yeah, I just feel terrible for people who are in it, because while you're in it, you're like, am I ever going to get pregnant? Is this ever going to work? And you just kind of have to stick with it. And
yeah. And look, there's many ways to start a family too. And, you know, and some people ultimately, you know, I don't think we can forget the people that do never have the success or spent, you know, the amount of money that goes into it and the, you know, being fortunate enough to be able to afford it and being able to go through that. Because in the first year of Lalo being created, we actually funded a fertility grant because of, you know, personally, when we were founding the company,
we were going through it.
And like every investor meeting, PR meetings, like everything was like, wait, you don't have kids? And it was just like, you know, like me clenching my fist. Even one investor meeting we were in, it was with a guy who was kind of crass and insensitive.
And Michael also prefaced before this specific meeting that like, if anyone brings this up again, I'm just letting you know, I'm going to drop a line. Like, don't be surprised.
Yeah. Like it had already been a few times. And I, you know, this guy says something like, you know, I'm really big fan of founder market fit. And, you know, you guys just aren't both parents. And I just like, was like, listen, guy, if biology was on my side, I'd be a parent right now. So if you want to play that card, that's cool. But we pretty much fit the exact market because we're going to be parents soon.
Yeah. Wow.
And ultimately, I couldn't be happier that he passed on that on our round.
Yeah.
Because I just, you know, not a kind of person that I'd
want to call. What a favor he did you.
Totally. Amazing.
Totally. Yeah. At that moment, we were like, all right, we turned him down.
Yep.
Yeah.
And,
and then honestly, I mean, Michael had said it multiple times after that. And it totally, that concept of, right, you are not this, so you cannot build this, totally went out the window. And truthfully, when I had come to Michael and said, hey, like, here's this crazy idea for some sort of baby company, Michael was thinking about it for himself as becoming a new parent. Like, this was also part of his journey.
We had just started trying.
So like, what, how long did it take you, Michael? 2 years plus?
Yeah, almost.
And that was all, when we first, when it was just you and I and WeWork too, like, this was like a huge piece of the building of Lalo and thinking through this was like, watch, you know, you were going on this journey. Your journey.
You were just getting married.
I was just getting married. And also, but like, I mean, I don't even know if we would have had my son now, because like I, you know, experienced like, you know, some of the heartache through you, which obviously was not fun, you know, for either of us. But I was like, Nick, like my wife, I was like, we got to get on this, because you just never know. You literally never know how lucky you are or not lucky. And then, you know, that perseverance and trying is just, you know, stress in and of itself amongst all the other things you have to go through in life. Especially with all, you know, three of us being founders and entrepreneurs, I think we all have a lot on our plates.
Brett, are you on leave right now? Are you taking some leave?
Yeah, at the Farmer's Dog, we have basically the same policy for dads and moms. Everybody gets a three-month leave, which you could either do all at one shot right after you have the baby. I mean, you could break it up however you want. I mean, you could do every other week. You could, you know, wait until the summer if you think that's going to be a better fit for you. I'm doing the full three right now. But yeah, it's been, I mean, what an experience. It's just surreal.
Yeah. And we have the same policy here, 12 week fully paid leave, which, you know, quite frankly, you know, we wish more companies at our stage and even your stage, which is a bit ahead of where we are, would adopt policies like that, because, you know, parental leave as a policy is important. But one thing we always talk about, Greg and I, when we were crafting our policy, is like, it's not just about the leave, right? Like, when your kid is born, you're overwhelmed, but like, it doesn't get easier, right? Like, mm-hmm. the problems just change, or the responsibilities change, you know, kid going to daycare or preschool, or, you know, your parental responsibilities just evolve over time. Mm-hmm. So it's more about creating an environment and a culture, workplace that supports parenting, supports families, and, you know, also supports people coming back into the workforce. So, you know, if they're coming back from a 3-month leave, do they roll in kind of casually or have some more flexibility, because it's an adjustment, and, you know, you don't want to lose those people either.
Couldn't agree with you more. Well, I think, you know, companies like ours, we're moving into this new phase of how a company treats their team members. I think, you know, in past decades, you know, people weren't looked at, you know, people were looked at as just like assets, as opposed to like human beings who are your team members, who matter, who have lives outside of work, and you have to support them. And I mean, it's something that we've been doing since the beginning, like even before we had this policy. You know, it's, for us, it's very simple. You know, you speak to your manager, speak to me, and you tell me that there's something going on in your life, and you could take whatever you need to get back on track and take whatever time is necessary. But yeah, I think the way that both of our companies are thinking about it will hopefully push the rest of the companies out there in the right direction.
Yeah. So, I mean, Brett, so like, as you're looking forward, I mean, obviously, now being a parent for a month, I mean, what are you most looking forward to? And, you know, now that Michael and I have a little bit,
we're seasoned veterans.
Yeah. We're pros. What if you had to ask one question to us, like, what would that question be?
Oh, well, I'd ask first probably which phase should I, like, which phase am I not aware of that is actually going to potentially be more difficult than the one that I'm in right now?
Teething.
When does that start?
I think like some people say like 3 or 4 months. My son, luckily, he was not a big crier when he teethed. Thank God. Like, I think everyone's,
the first bottom ones were
for years,
but then tops coming in, she was a nightmare. I think. And like, the sleep schedule changes, it throws everything off. Like, do they want to eat? Do they not want to eat? Will they sleep? Will they nap? You know, like, it throws them off because they're in pain. They can't tell you you're in pain. Yeah. Baby Tylenol is an amazing thing.
Yeah.
What is your take on pacifiers?
Ooh. I don't really have a take. I mean, I think it's like breastfeeding or any of that stuff. Yeah. If it works for you, it works for you.
My
daughter gave it up really fast.
Did she?
She didn't like it.
My son is not like someone who has one in his mouth all the time, but he sleeps with 3 or 4 of them in his crib.
Yeah.
And so if in the middle of the night, he just knows like, I can pick this up and soothe himself, but he's not like, oh, I need a pacifier 24/7. Like, okay. That's him. Brett, I think my hardest period was like month 4, when you're like, you should be sleeping, but you're not, and I'm still getting up at 3 a.m. Like, that for me, because like, you've been doing it for so long with the expectation you were going to do it, and you're like, you see the future, you see your, like, the next moment in time where you won't have to wake up at 3 or 4 a.m., and then all of a sudden there's like a week that goes and they're just fucking terrors.
Yeah, sleep training. I'll add on to Greg's note just so you're prepared a little bit. Number one, sleep training that Greg mentioned, being in pain when his dog was crying. When you're sleep training and whatever method you choose, it's just painful. It's really painful. It's only a couple days usually. However, the thing that most people don't talk about is sleep training isn't like a one-time thing. Like, their schedules or things can get thrown off and you're back into sleep training at different phases. It can be like a multiple times within their first year.
It depends.
The teething throws it off.
Yeah.
They change stages so fast. Like, the second you think you're in a routine, boom, it changes.
Has Paz been a good eater?
She's been a great eater. She's been a great sleeper.
That's good. I mean, you're locked in then, hopefully. Fingers crossed. I mean, honestly, the better the baby is at eating, the like literally the better they're gonna sleep. Like,
oh, good.
That's why I'd be like, oh, just finish your bottle. And he wouldn't be finishing it. I know he wasn't hungry, but I was like, but I need to sleep. So please finish your bottle.
Yeah. there's definitely been a couple of feedings that like take an hour because she'll like take like, you know, 2/3 of her bottle and then there's an ounce or so left that she's just fallen asleep on.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Well, at one point I graduated to something called the dream feed.
Oh, you figured that out.
Yeah. Like, honestly, I was like, this sounds crazy, but like, I wanted him to sleep so badly through the night. And he also just didn't. It was crazy. Like, you literally just like pick them up. They're dead asleep. You just plop it in and they just take that. He ate faster during a dream feed than any other feed. Like 2 seconds.
He's
like
dreaming about it. Dreaming about the tea.
I guess so.
Awesome, Brett. Well, this has been awesome. As always, great to chat. Thank you for joining us today.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for tuning into the Dad Pod. Let us know who you want to hear on the pod next by DMing us on Instagram at Lalo, that's L-A-L-O, or emailing us at dadpod@meetlalo.com. We'll catch you next week with a brand new episode.